I'm Brian Russo, and welcome back to Coastal Connection. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll learn about a new project that aims to revitalize one of Maryland's 10 most endangered historic properties, and the plans to not only breathe new life into the Crisfield home, but also into the local arts community. But first, we continue our back-to-school coverage in Somerset County. The county has been struggling economically for years, and now ranks as the poorest in the entire state. But Somerset's challenges aren't just related to economics. Daily struggles with poverty, hunger, and education are direct consequences of dealing with those economic troubles. As of September of last year, based on household income, 72% of the kids enrolled in Somerset's public school system were eligible for free or reduced-price meals. This year, the entire student population will get free breakfast and lunch for the very first time through a federal child nutrition program. Somerset is the first and only county in the state that is using this program in all 9 of its public schools. So I sat down with Somerset County Public Schools Superintendent John Gaddis this week to talk about the challenges the program may face and to find out what success might look like in regards to this program.
How we started was by looking at each individual school and what their poverty rate was, because that's what free and reduced lunch is based on. And so you could take a cluster of schools. So we could have taken 4 schools and done this, or maybe 6 schools, and we looked at what our rates would be. And so ultimately, after a couple of meetings, got some people involved throughout different departments at the board office in the schools, and we talked about it. And really it came down to, you know what, how could we pick just 4 schools where poverty is a big word that people use, but, you know, poverty doesn't know color, poverty doesn't know situation. And so we said we're going to look at our numbers countywide. The numbers were still through the roof, and so we made a conscious decision. And I guess ultimately it was Helen Riggins, our food service coordinator, and myself, because we signed the paperwork and said, you know what, we're going to do this, and we're going to do it for our whole community. So every one of our students, all 2,967 of them, receive a lunch and a breakfast, and it's at no charge.
Let's try and put quantify the type, you know, because when you say poverty, it can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. In past years, before this program was put into place, as you mentioned, 70% of the students already qualified for it anyway. What does poverty look like here in the school system? What are these kids struggling with?
Poverty for us, lowest family median income in the state, lowest individual median income in the state, highest childhood obesity rate in the state, one of the highest dropout rates in the state. Poverty is making families have to scramble, and that was a word one of our parents used. She talked about having to scramble to find lunch money, and they were on the reduced lunch program. So for us, when you have really no sustained industry or business besides the prison, University of Maryland, the school system, Lankford, Cisco, but most of the people who work in those particular places, they don't live in Somerset County. Mm-hmm. So they employ from Worcester and Wicomico, and they move because there are more choices there. We're more of a destination. So the poverty for us came down to the situation of having so many children that even though we were at 70%, we knew 2 things. We knew that the program was used really strongly at the elementary level. Mm-hmm. But in middle school, or in our case, our intermediate school and our 2 high schools, our rates were low. That's the social stigma. And that's also the fact that those age kids, students, for whatever reason, paperwork doesn't always get home. And so we really felt that's where the impact would be. And in fact, we've seen an increase of lunches and breakfast participation. It's only been 2 weeks of school through every single building. But poverty for us means being able to save an elementary, a parent with 1 child in elementary school, over $200 a year. A student in intermediate, $400. So put those 2 together, most have 2 or 3 kids. You're talking substantial money, $700 to $1,000 a year, and that's people who are already on federal and state programs. Yeah. So the economic impact is big. Now bills can be paid, clothing, and those type of opportunities. Poverty goes beyond the meals. It goes living conditions when you have double occupancy in what's supposed to be in a house, no jackets, those kind of issues. Maybe some of those get a little bit better now because they don't have to worry about the school meals.
But talk about what the numbers look like, you know, as far as the school system trying to pay for all of this and feed all of these kids each and every day. It's a 180-day school year.
There's a reimbursement program. And what we found was before we went into the program, we looked at what our food service did and what our participation rate was. And there's a percentage that we get back from the feds and from the state. Well, that number increased. So in many counties, food service is a necessity, but it's also budgetarily not a success. Very few systems have self-sustaining food service programs. Mm-hmm. With this reimbursement being higher, we believe, number one, we're going to turn it around because the reimbursement rate for breakfast and lunch is higher because we're countywide, and participation is going to be up. So, for instance, we at two of the elementary schools where we have pre-K, they changed their schedules around, so we're feeding pre-K children now. So instead of just coming, and it's a half-day program for most, even though we have full-day pre-K at each school we're trying, we now have 40 students in one building that normally would not have been fed. Now that's an additional 200 meals a week, mm-hmm. times 34 weeks, 36 weeks.
Have you had to increase the number of staffers from the food service side of it, the people who are making the food every day and serving the kids every day?
Right now we have not. We're looking into that. We want to see what our participation rate is. And then once we work out, and that's one of the nice things about it, if the reimbursement, because the reimbursement rate's up, participation is up, that means there'll be more money coming into food service. If we need, our hope and our belief is that because of the increase of money that'll come back in reimbursement, we will be able to, if we need to hire additional people, hire, and there'll be a zero impact. There'll be a net gain, a zero net gain.
Let's talk a little bit about what's being served. Have you had people opting out of this program, or do they even have the ability to opt out if they want to?
It's a total choice program. 22 years in Worcester County as a teacher, administrator, assistant superintendent, and we always did a parent survey, and number one concern was the food we serve. Came over to Somerset as superintendent, did a parent survey last year. Number one concern, the food we serve. Fat-free pizza is fat-free pizza. It's not going to be the best cheese with the grease on top from the good mozzarella. However, when you make interesting food choices, one of the things that I heard was, can we have fresh fruit? So I went in the cafeteria today. We've got fresh tomatoes, fresh oranges. We're also trying to buy that locally. There is an incredible amount of red tape in being able to do that, not only for us, but for the farmer. Mm-hmm. So not every, we just can't go to a stand and buy it. So there are federal regulations as far as amount of fat, total fat, saturated fat, sugars, protein, and everything that we must meet. So yes, we can still serve pizza, but it's a fat-free cheese. And that's the example I use with everybody. So what we've done, and really a big thank you to Scott Blackburn, who is food service coordinator in Worcester County. Scott runs a summer boot camp. And we take our food service workers, and he invites everybody from the lower shore, and they go over and they learn how to take that normal food and spice it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then they bring that back so that spice up spaghetti a little bit, but still meeting those guidelines. So we look at what is attractive to the student, what sides are really important, and also how we bring those things together and create a really, what we think is a dynamic meal choice, and to give kids choices. Overall, what we've heard so far has been very positive. You always have naysayers. We have people who would say, it's another government program. Has nothing to do with that for us. But so far, everything's been very positive.
It's good that you note that, too, because, you know, as some people see the headline of Somerset giving, you know, its entire school district and all the kids in that district free lunches or free meals, the thought or the criticism is, well, they're just focusing on quantity rather than quality. Right. As you mentioned, you know, Somerset County has the highest poverty rate in the state, but it also has the highest child obesity rate. So talk a little bit about how much was thought into that program to make sure that, yes, you're feeding kids, but you're feeding kids quality.
One of the things you hear out there that we've dealt with for years is it's expensive to eat healthy, mm-hmm. and it is. Product does cost more. Being in programs like this will allow us to have even more choices. So for us, again, it was a chance to impact our community and say, guys, let's, and gals, let's look at this. we've got the highest childhood obesity rate. Everything is fried. Sometimes when you go and you ask for something broiled, they look at you, you know, and I understand that. But at the same time, we know that two meals a day are going to be healthy. They're going to meet federal and state guidelines, and that hopefully with education, by making the right choices, that the kids will start or the students will start to see, you know what, broccoli's not bad. Broccoli can help me in a lot of ways. And, hey, Mom and Dad, I went home. I had fresh tomatoes today. I had oranges. I had a nice vegetable. Can we try some of this? And hopefully, you know, that whole impact about economics, not having to spend all this money on school lunches, maybe some of that can go to buying some fresh string beans or whatever it may be. So, you know, with school lunch, you want it to taste good. You want it to be something that helps the kids change their eating habits, which is going to address the obesity, but it's also a lifetime healthy habit to have.
You mentioned the naysayers, and I think we'd be remiss if we didn't, you know, speak about some of the people who might be against this program or who may believe that school systems should be focusing on educating our kids rather than feeding our kids. Many people who disagree with that think that the two kind of go hand in hand, especially in an area like Somerset County where poverty is such an issue and just getting kids to school, or some of the kids that are in the school don't know where their next meal is going to come. How much of an impact do you think in a place like Somerset County a program like this can make?
I think it has a huge impact. If someone disagrees, that's great. Let's meet and talk. If we were just to educate children and that's all we worried about, we'd have a lot of problems. The reality is we have kids who are hungry. We have kids who are in need. Statistics show us 25 to 30%. The only meals they were getting were what they got at school. The research shows, and I can fill any room in Somerset County with research that shows the impact of going to school hungry. Kids are not attentive. Their behavior issues. They don't learn. When your stomach's grumbling, even as an adult, what do? You go to the fridge. Well, I'm blessed. I open the fridge, there's something in it. How about when there's not? And so we have to worry about social issues in school. And we do much more than just feed and educate. And that has been a criticism that school systems take on too much. For me, this was an opportunity to say to our community, let's all come out of our own little silos. Let's work together. And let's do something that's going to have not only economic, educational, but nutritional impact. And that's what we've done.
That was John Gaddis, the superintendent of Somerset County Public Schools, talking with me about the new federal program, which will give free breakfast and lunches to all Somerset County Public School students. What's your take on this approach? Should schools be responsible for filling kids' bellies with food in addition to filling their brains with knowledge? Email us at coastal@wamu.org. We'll stay in Somerset County and travel a few miles down the road to a very old house in Crisfield. It's one of the few remaining telescope houses on the Eastern Shore, and is considered exceptional because of its unaltered and highly unusual woodwork. It sits in the middle of 9 secluded acres of meadow, woods, farmland, and wetlands, bordered on the east by Johnson's Creek, which provides access to the Pocomoke Sound. Jennifer Smith grew up in Crisfield and spent much of her childhood in this house. The Nelson Homestead, as it's known, has been in Smith's family for half a century. But now the home is at a very critical point. It needs to be fixed soon, or the natural degradation of this historic home will be too much to reverse. Preservation Maryland, which is a partner of the National Trust for Historic Preservation, has named the Nelson Homestead one of the top 10 most important endangered historic properties in the entire state of Maryland. We first met Jennifer Smith and her husband Scott at the Wood and Stone Songwriting Retreat in Crisfield back in June. They brought top-notch songwriters and professional instructors from all over the country to meet here on the shore to write songs. Now, as any musician will tell you, myself included, crowdfunding campaigns are a vital part of how music projects get made in this day and age. So with the dream to restore the Nelson Homestead in mind, Jennifer Smith has started an ambitious crowdfunding campaign to save this historic property and breathe new creative life into the home and the community by making it a destination for the Wood and Stone Retreat and for artists all over the world.
You know, it's a really magical place. I've had this repetitive dream since I was a kid. And throughout my adult life, that I'm in the house and I open a door and I discover a whole new section of the place that I never knew existed. And it's always been a great dream that I've enjoyed having. And I kind of wonder now if, you know, this project that we're going forward with isn't you know, part of that living out.
This new part of the dream is trying to make it this improvement of this home a tangible thing. You're trying to raise $168,000 to fully revitalize this house. And as with any big construction project, it's in phases. So let's talk a little bit about the fundraising efforts. You know, I'd seen that if you reach $50,000, you basically can get to the point where, you know, you can stop the degradation. But the $168,000 fully gets it to full revitalization.
It's kind of at a tipping point right now. And we actually, you know, as career musicians, we can't afford to own a second property. So we had been to a realtor to talk about selling it, which I really didn't want to do. And they said, you know, it could be a few years before it gets sold. But in a few years, we'd probably watch it go past the tipping point and not be salvageable anymore. There's some foundation rot. There's water coming in the chimneys. The roof is a little bit unstable. And I just couldn't see that happen. So we've had contractors, preservation specialists, and consultants come down and evaluate the scope of work and what's going to be involved. And so that first $50,000 would take care and stabilize the foundation. It would secure the roof. It would allow us to shore up the driveway so that there's access to the house, because the access when it rains and it gets a little wet, it's kind of sketchy. It's kind of hard to get back in there. The first $50,000 will at least buy us some time. So the $168,000 will pretty much just put it back to where it was in the early 1900s.
I think it's really interesting to note, too, that you're not just trying to revitalize this house so you can live in it. It's actually, this revitalization is with a purpose. You and your husband, Scott, you do this thing called the Wooden Stone Retreat, which we did a story on Coastal Connection a few months ago where I actually met you guys for the first time. And, you know, it's good to note here that since we've played some shows together as musicians, the Wooden Stone Retreat you've been holding at a park just a few miles from the Nelson Homestead. And it's your vision and your hope to have the Wooden Stone Retreat at the Nelson Homestead. Talk
yep.
about that dream of not only revitalizing this house, but helping to grow the arts and entertainment community in Crisfield.
Yeah, you know, along with the Wooden Stone Retreat, I imagine this would be a place that artists from around the country could come to work on their art, you know, get away for a week, and in exchange for giving them an opportunity to retreat, work on their art. I'd like to set up some programming where they would come to the local high schools, go speak at UMES and Salisbury University, do concerts or art shows for the community, get together with the community for mentorship and learning experiences. You know, it's hard to get down to Crisfield.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really on anybody's tour route.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of 3 hours from D.C., Baltimore, Philadelphia. So I want to make it a destination for great artists and musicians that can come down and give a little something back to the community.
To see pictures of the Nelson Homestead and to find the link to learn about Jennifer Smith's crowdfunding campaign to restore one of the 10 most endangered historic houses in Maryland, click to our website, wamucoast.org. I'm Brian Rousseau, and you're listening to Coastal Connection.